Baseball season is back. The 2017 season is finally underway, and no better way to celebrate than with Out of the Park Baseball 18 and MLB Manager 2017. Both of those games help bring you this week's episode of the Press Row Podcast. Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here. We are so excited at Out of the Park Developments for our two new baseball games. You guys probably know all about Out of the Park Baseball 18. If you don't, well, why not? It's the follow-up to the 2016 Metacritic PC Game of the Year. This year's game has a whole bunch of cool new features, including a new challenge mode so you can battle against your friends. It includes the addition for the first time ever in any game, the addition of the Historic Negro League, so you can take all those great players from the past and have them compete with or against the major leaguers of their time or before or afterwards. It's got a great updated 3D engine, which allows the gameplay itself to unfold in a really cool, nifty way. And it's got highlight reels now, which are completely new, and just so much more stuff. And you guys also probably know that you can play any team, any season, major league or minor leagues, from the late 1870s through 2017, including the latest rosters from opening day 2017. It's unbelievable. And MLB Manager lets you take Out of the Park Baseball with you anywhere you go on your phone or your iPad, or either iPhone or Android device or the iPad. MLB Manager is only $4.99. It's got a brand new visual look and feel. It's got the 2017 season. It's got three historic past seasons, 1927, 1948, or 1997. And you can get any other season you want for just 99 cents. You can get 10 for $5, or every season dating back to 1901 for just $19.99. MLB Manager 2017 available now for $4.99 on the Apple iTunes Store or the Android Store, Google Play. And Out of the Park Baseball 18 available through our website. And if you use the code PRESS18, we'll give you an extra 10% off, and you get it through Steam as well. Out of the Park Baseball 18, MLB Manager 2017, proudly bringing you this week's episode of the Press Row Podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hey, this is the Press Row Podcast, and I'm back in the hosting chair after a week away. It's Brian Weedeye, Pasta Padre here. And along with me is Rich Grisham. We're going to talk about a number of non-baseball subjects, I think. I could be wrong and we veer into baseball somehow, but the plan is to not necessarily talk about baseball after a month of mostly baseball-centric shows. There's actually going to be a lot about basketball we're going to be talking about, and that's kind of fitting. The playoffs are underway. First, though, I think I want to get into a little bit the topic that you, Rich, and Millennium discussed last week, because I agreed with some of the sentiment. I didn't necessarily share in the same feelings about a right versus a wrong way, necessarily, like I said, for consumers to express frustration when they're dissatisfied with a product. So maybe, Rich, you can recap briefly what last week's show was all about for those who missed it.
Well, last week was just about, it was a conversation, and it was a conversation between me and Chris, a.k.a. Millennium, the community manager at Operation Sports, about what was happening in the community at that moment in time. And, you know, Chris obviously is very much in touch with hundreds, if not thousands, of people in that community on a regular basis. And just, you know, we had a conversation about what the concerns were from one group, how he feels that people should conduct themselves. And frankly, I have even stronger feelings on how people should conduct themselves, 99% of which are ignored by 99% of the people on the internet these days, which is unfortunate. And it was, you know, there's just a lot of talk about how he feels that people should behave and the types of responsibilities that different people have in the community, whether it's fans or game developers or marketers. And I thought it was an interesting conversation. I'm in an interesting spot because I'm both a consumer and I also do work in the industry, in the sports video game industry, in marketing. So like I clearly have a lot of thoughts about those kind of things. But, you know, what I do is small potatoes compared to the big billion-dollar boys that we talk about on a regular basis around here. So I found it interesting. There was a lot of conversation about it. A lot of people agree with some of the stuff we had to say. A lot of people disagree with some of the stuff we had to say. And I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I do think, obviously, there are good ways to conduct yourself on social media or in direct contact with whoever you're dealing with on a daily basis, and there are poor ways to do that. But when it comes to a product that is not as advertised, we can talk about MLB The Show. We can talk any number of, if we keep it within the scope of video games, any number of video games release with issues, right? And so sometimes those issues go beyond. Sometimes it was false advertising. Look at like a No Man's Sky. Sometimes it's server related. Look at a Sim City. And it's just a feeling of kind of being misled. Is
Halo Master Chief Collection is another great example of just a disastrous situation.
Yeah, so there's a lot of factors in there, and that, like I said, that's sometimes it's a feeling of being misled. A lot of times it comes down to communication or lack thereof, and we've seen some of that recently, and how that allows frustrations to kind of build. And what people do now is, again, it's social media. That is their primary way to reach a company. It's their primary way to be heard, and it's the primary way that influence affects decisions. And we see the effectiveness of waves of people creating bad PR for companies. Look at the United Airlines incident, for example. I mean, there's any number of those things where when people band together, they can affect change. Now, obviously, we're talking on a different scale here as far as a video game versus being physically mistreated and or emotionally mistreated. There's all sorts of different avenues that people look to kind of affect change, again, like I mentioned earlier. So when it comes to a consumer product, and we'll say a video game here, one voice usually does not get through. And as much as companies will say it does, one voice doesn't. So if there's going to be a reaction from a company, if there is going to be a change made for the better, usually that does come out of bad PR. It does come out of what might be perceived as negativity, where it's too much and they have to act. And so if you have a situation where a game releases with these massive problems, I do not think people can reasonably be expected to just be patient and rely on the companies. Just say to themselves, oh, it's going to get fixed. No big deal. This is just normal. Because if that happens, if everybody felt that way, things wouldn't get fixed.
Yes. Well, what I'm going to say is, as a video game publisher, maker, developer, you have to deliver what you say you're going to deliver. That's the bottom line. That's why you need to be extremely careful about what you announce and what you say your game is going to do and how it's going to work, and that you have 100% confidence that those things are going to work. You have to deliver what you say you're going to deliver. If you don't, then you deserve any and all criticism. You know, we're in a world where consumers have a tremendous amount of power, more power than they ever have. And there is no rule that says you as a consumer have to buy MLB 17 The Show the day it comes out, or that you have to buy anything, any video game the day that it comes out. You are completely within your rights, and in some cases, it's the right thing to do. Or the smart thing to do,
but
to wait for a product to do what it says it's going to do comfortable.
You can say that, Rich, but you get punished if you don't buy it on day one.
That's true. And that's something I mentioned last week, is that they're really making it hard for themselves, video game makers, when you further it by doing exactly that, by rewarding, you know, by charging even extra money for pre-orders or special editions for modes that don't work. That exacerbates it even more. I totally agree. It's a problem, and you shouldn't do it. And there's just no getting around the fact that people have a right to be angry when important ways to play the game that they paid good money to do don't work. They have every single right to be angry. They have every single right to complain. My only counter to that is, right, you can complain and you can be legitimate in complaining, but you also, no one is forcing you to make a purchase, and you can wait a couple of days to see how things are going before you necessarily decide to jump in. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying you're not, no one's hopeless or a total victim here. You know, you do have the ability to say, you know what, I'm not going to go in day one. I'm not going to buy this day one, because one thing that this video game console generation has proven to us is that most stuff doesn't work when it launches, period. Not just sports games. Right. Most stuff does not work. Like, we're way past the point of this being a surprise. It's a surprise when things do work.
Do you think that just should be acceptable now? That the first 2 weeks, You know, don't expect things to work like they said they're going to work. Is that acceptable now? Just because it happens so often, it's not every game. I mean, if you look at EA's games, they launch pretty smoothly. Their servers work. You can access all their features, right? So it's not every game, but it seems like people have come to just accept this idea that, okay, we'll give them a few weeks and then we'll see how things are going. Is that, to you, that's okay now? Or is that something there needs to be consumer pushback on?
Well, clearly it is okay to the general public, because that's exactly what happens. MLB The Show is in the top five of the March NPDs, right? And it's only on one console, right? That it already in overall sales is limited because it's exclusive to the PlayStation 4 console, not even PS3 anymore. So... Mm-hmm. Clearly, there is some acceptance in the general public about this. Now, you say, should this be acceptable? I mean, that's a very binary term, acceptable or unacceptable.
Deal with it.
I mean, what's acceptable to me, frankly, because I don't play Diamond Dynasty, it doesn't matter to me. I'm having a great time playing MLB The Show. So from that perspective, I would be facetious if I would even say that. I mean, if we fold our arms and say that's unacceptable, the only way for that to matter is to not buy a game when it comes out, or to buy it when you are comfortable that you understand how it's going to work. I mean, acceptable or unacceptable, it's the way it is with virtually every game. Even single player games receive multiple patches over the course of their life. Mm-hmm. I view this mostly as a good thing. I mean, PC games have had patches forever, like ever since PC games became a thing. You know, what it just comes down to is you should deliver what you say you're going to deliver. And if you don't deliver it, expect to feel the wrath of your consumers, because consumers will feel misled mm-hmm. and cheated. Even if that's not an intention, I don't think it is the intention of any of these. Even if it's not the intention, right, people still feel that way. Sure. I mean, we see them saying that all the time.
So I think where I see the line drawn, in my view at least, is when it gets personal, right? I don't care if somebody wants to tweet to a corporate account on Twitter, right? Okay, I don't care if they swear, I don't care if whatever. That it's probably not being monitored really anyways, but when you get personal with like developers, right? Who most of them probably don't have any say, any input, any effect on the issues that are at hand or on preparing for those issues ahead of time. But at the same time, I don't think it's should be required. And I think Millennium kind of went down this road where you should understand the development process, you should understand the developers work hard, that the responsibilities of the community to be kind of create a positive spin on things, and I don't agree with that. I don't think it, from a consumer perspective, things are different for us, right, Rich? We sit here, you have different different experiences from different sides of things, development side, media side. Same with me. Yep. We yep. also have contacts we can reach out to, developers, sure. PR, marketing.
Contacts that we earned over the years, right, by working. They didn't just appear out of thin air. We spent years making these contacts and cultivating relationships. But yes, you're absolutely right.
So it's easy for us to say, or it's easier for us to say that we know they're working on it. We know they're trying to improve it, or whatever it might be. But from just a general consumer point of view, they don't see any of that stuff. They don't have those contacts. They don't know what's going on. So
well, they don't care.
And it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter to the normal person. It does not matter why something doesn't work. And to me, I really don't care why things don't work either when they're supposed to work. Like, it's not my problem. I am not paid to fix this problem or to understand the problem. They are paid to fix and understand those problems.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. Some people do care, you know, about the development process, or they're fascinated by engineering or by animation or by artificial intelligence. But yeah, the vast majority of people that play video games, they know that when they turn on their PlayStation and they, you know, load up the game, whether it's on a disc or whether it's digitally on their machine, and they click the button, they want all the stuff to work because that's the expectation. And that's an expectation that was set by the people who made the game by putting these different spots on the menu, right? Saying, play this, play that, try this, try that. And when you click on stuff and it doesn't work, it's incredibly frustrating. And most people don't care, and nobody needs to care, because you paid your $60 for the game. Your expectation is basic stuff should work. I mean, anything that's connected to the internet can have issues here and there. We're not talking about that. We're talking about consistent, persistent problems. I completely agree that, you know, it's not incumbent upon anybody, excuse me, to understand the development process at all, because most people don't get. I mean, I don't care how my car is put together. I just know that when I get in, I turn it on and it drives. That's all I care about.
You hope so.
Well, if it's not, then I got big problems, and I'm angry, and I got a right to be angry.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyways, that was basically. I just wanted to hit on some of those things, Rich, because I enjoyed listening to the show last week, which I was not a part of, and I just wanted to get some thoughts in there, and actually we can kind of transition right here, because one of the issues that was brought up as far as kind of community discontent around certain games was NBA 2K17, which continues to patch. I think they've had 12 patches, some of them inconsequential, but several of them have changed fundamental things about the game, and then they've also done updates besides that, besides just official patches, that have changed fundamental things about the game. So I want to know your feeling on this, Rich. When we look at updates done to games, usually it's a positive thing. Usually we say, oh, they're continuing to work on the game, they're continuing to improve the game. But at what point do you not want things to change, or is there not a point where that's the case? Because we are 7 months into NBA 2K17, something along those lines.
Yeah, but it's a big basketball time of the year. The playoffs are started. You know, this is when the NBA really becomes the centerpiece of the sports landscape, is this time of the year.
Right. So it's still a very relevant game. And there's still a lot of people playing it. It still sells relatively
absolutely
well, all the way through the playoffs. But for the people who've been playing 7 months, Rich, do you think, like, most other games don't have that long a tail? NBA is a little different because its season is longer and the playoffs go on for like 8 months. You know, at a certain point, if you've been playing for 7 months, as many people have, millions of people who bought it back in September, do you just want the game to be what the game is? And I'm not talking about fixing problems necessarily.
Right.
I'm talking about changing, for example, what's been going on with 2K, changing the shooting, changing the percentages involved in shooting, changing the meter and how that is reflected. Because it's interesting to me, because I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to shooting, for example, because you even have developers for 2K going on Twitter and posting polls with things like, if you get a perfect release, should the shot go in 100% of the time, or should it go in 80% of the time, or should it go in like a real shot percentage for that player, whatever it might be. Things along those lines. And you look at the results, and it's basically split. There is no consensus on how shooting should be handled. You know, there's a sim way of thinking, which is it should be, you know, that particular shooter's, you know, like top percentage or real life percentage when you get the release right. Or, but then there's a more arcadey side of things, the more just fun factor side of things, which is if I get the release perfect, the shot should go in. That's very general way of looking at things, because there's a million other factors that go in as far as like, is a defender in the guy's face, you know, whatever it might be. There's other things that affect shot percentages and shot success. But when you get to a certain point in the year, Rich, and you've learned shooting and you're comfortable with it, and then it keeps changing every 2 weeks, is that problematic in your eyes?
You know, there's a lot to unpack with this. You hit on a number of things. So let's take your first and your last question, which is, you've been playing for a while, is this a good thing? I'm the first to admit that I have played NBA 2K17, but not extensively like I have in years past. The main reason for that was Pro Evo 2017. So I'm going to use that as my example. I played a lot of Pro Evo, you know, right. And I really got to a, for me anyway, again, not the kind of, not an esports experts kind of situation, but for me, I got to a real fundamental level of understanding of the controls of that game and what would happen when I did certain things with certain players that I had spent a lot of time using. And if that were to fundamentally change in January or February, when I had been playing the game for an extended period of time, poured in a lot of time and loved every minute of it, I would have had a real problem with that. Mm-hmm. And again, we're not talking about fixing bugs. We're talking about altering the fundamentals of certain kinds of things, such as your shot and your positioning. So having said that, I really, the biggest issue I see with this is not changing mechanics. It's, you're really talking about two completely different games and communities within the overall game of NBA 2K17. Park versus, yeah, you know, regular 5-on-5. I mean, those are two different worlds. And the Pro-Am, and that's really the bigger question is, man, can NBA 2K, is it too big, right? I asked that question to Chris last week, and he sort of thought not NBA, not only NBA, but all of these games, yeah, they're just too big. And he sort of said, yes. And I'm, you know, I asked the question because I think it, you know, there's certainly a chance that the answer is yes. So I, you know, it's tough. I mean, these guys, Mike Wang and Dazar and Scott O'Gallagher, you know, these guys know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. So I just have to sort of trust that, you know what, they're doing what's best for their game and their community. I have a hard time reconciling that with putting myself in the shoes of somebody who had spent a lot of time playing NBA 2K and it keeps changing. But on the other hand, if the changes ultimately are for the better,
that's
obviously on a person-by-person perspective. Some people will like it, some people won't.
Yeah.
So it's tough. It's really tough. You said it. There's no right or wrong answer. I have a hard time thinking that ultimately it's good for the end user. I have a hard time thinking that. But, if they didn't make any changes for the last 2 or 3 months, perhaps that would have been even tougher on the community. It is surprising that they haven't sort of said, okay, this is the game now. You know, right, we're moving on to make it next year's game. This is the game. We love you, community. We're not making any more changes. We're moving on.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I was going to jump in there when you were talking about person to person, because it's absolutely the truth. And you look at the results of those polls on Twitter. You look at the discussion going around in various places on forums and social media. And you see the tweets go out from, like, Mike Wang saying, you know, tomorrow there's going to be this change with shooting. And you see the stream of replies, and there's several of them that say, like, why do you keep messing with the shooting? Why do you keep changing these things? There's and then, well, you can get into other the other ones, which are like, you know, there's other things that should be worth fixed also.
I mean, just to interrupt you real quick. I mean, Mike Wang is incredibly well known for doing one thing, changing everything all the time. Like, this is what he does. I mean, he changed the fundamental shooting controls in NBA 2K at least 3 years in a row, to the point where I wrote articles about it. Owen Good wrote articles about it. I've had him on this show and asked him, why have you changed the controls every single year? Mm-hmm. So, like, clearly this is just part of the MO of Mike Wang. The dude changes. He makes changes. He tweaks. He's one of those guys that's what he does. At least that's what history seems to tell us, right?
Is this also being looked at in a way almost like beta testing changes for what they're going to roll out with NBA 2K18, as far as let's play around with the shooting now, get feedback, tweak it, get more feedback, see if we can find the right balance, and then apply that to 2K18 also?
You know, I think it has more to do with the fact that these games are becoming more and more blurred between versions, and we continue to move slower than I thought. Mm. I'm the first to admit that I thought we would have been here by now, or at least somebody would have been here by now, to a subscription-based sort of persistent NBA, NFL, MLB. And we are, I firmly believe that that's where we are going to get. It's just a matter of when. And frankly, there's the makers of the games should be in no hurry to go there, because while potentially they open up a lot more revenue, the risk to a dip in revenue is significant as well if it doesn't all work out right. So I get why we're not there. But ultimately, it's just that's how everything else is. You know, you buy a subscription to your music, you buy a subscription to your television and your movies. That's where the world's going. But anyway, it's just that's what I think it is more. It's more of not necessarily a beta for next year, but just this is much more of a persistent basketball online universe. And that's to me what this feels like more than anything.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting to be so late in the cycle and to get those fundamental changes made and how that affects people who are playing on a consistent basis and never getting the consistency that they might expect out of the game at a certain point. When you talk about the game being huge, NBA 2K is as big as they come and probably the biggest of them all. And they have to, you know, find a way to balance out, like you said, park and pro-am versus franchise, the way, you know, more arcadey versus sim. They have to find a way, and maybe that's, you know, having different sets of settings and different sliders applied in certain areas. But the one constant has to be the controls, right? And the and things like the shot meter. We can't be different in different ways in different places. So it's really, I can see how difficult it must be to come up with a solution there.
And again, maybe the solution is there is no permanent solution. Maybe they're just, you're always sort of making adjustments. Sports is a very fluid thing. You know, you're constantly changing lineups and altering the, you know, strategies for games and you know, maybe it's just more like that. It's just, you know, you put it out there, you see. I mean, I'm sure they're sitting on tons of analytics too that are giving them feedback. They're not doing this in a vacuum. They've got to be looking at data, looking at percentages, looking at all sorts of stuff that we have no idea about. That's got to be feeding into this too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about a game that really doesn't have that kind of crisis going for it, because it is very well defined as an arcade-like game, and that's a new one called NBA Playgrounds, which is it was announced just a few weeks ago. Nobody really knew anything about it.
I like that.
except that a name existed. I think it was first discovered related to Nintendo Switch, actually. But now we know a lot about the game, and it looks very much like an NBA Jam. It's more yes. an NBA Jam than an NBA Street, despite being yes. set outdoors. Two on two, over the top, arcade style, gameplay, caricature kind of type character models. NBA licensed, like I said, NBA Playgrounds, completely NBA licensed.
Yep.
Real players, real uniforms, real team names, all of that.
Legendary players all Legends. Over the place.
Yeah, so we have the roster now. There's a total of 43 legends from the past, some really recognizable ones that I'm sure they probably had to license individually. And then 3 to 6 players from each team representing those teams. This is a game that's going to be $20, which is pretty reasonable. We don't know a whole lot about modes or anything of that nature. It will have online, but $20, Xbox One, PS4, PC, Switch? Nintendo Switch. Yep, and it'll be
out next week for the Switch. Oh, in May for the Switch. May. Okay, good. Yeah, I'm getting this on the Switch. Yeah. I mean,
calm down, Rich. Yes, Switch will have a game.
Good, because I want to, this is the kind of game that if it's good, having it sort of at home and on the go will be a real bonus.
Yeah, I think that would probably be the ideal way to play. I don't think this game is one that necessarily needs the power of like a PS4 Pro necessarily, or a high-end PC. But yeah, for $20, it'll be a download. And it looks like it could be fun, but caveats here, right?
Sure.
First time developer for a sports game. The Saber Interactive is the name of the development studio. They have worked on third person shooters and first person shooters in the past, so they have development experience. But first time into sports, and it's the first the launch. It's the first new IP. First attempt at it, you can't expect it to be an NBA Jam right out of the gate, but I think it's exciting because we haven't had an arcade-style basketball game, like a legit one, a licensed one, since the NBA Jam kind of rebooted back 5 or 6 years ago was the last one, and then NBA Street was 10 years ago, so... getting more variety in that area is exciting. I'm just curious, other than your opinion of it being on Switch, Rich, have you liked what you've seen and heard about this game so far?
Well, there's been very little. There's been a couple of trailers. The second trailer had a little bit more than the first trailer. I like the fact that this is here because, like many, many, many people, I loved NBA Street, at least Volume 2 in particular. I just played a ton of. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everybody loves NBA Jam, or we did. I mean, there's just no way not to enjoy various versions of those games. So, yes, I'm definitely glad. I'm just – every new sports game that comes out, I'm glad about. Whether I ultimately wind up liking it or not, whether it's a licensed game or whether it's a Rocket League or a Disc Jam, whatever it is, bring it on. Love it.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, there's also a reason that we don't get a whole lot of new – sports games from new developers because we just talked 5 minutes ago about how nobody should care, but regardless whether you care, it's incredibly hard to make these
especially from scratch.
Right, that's my point. Like, there have been multiple attempts by new groups to build new sports tech. I remember, for example, just recently, right? Old Time Hockey. Mm-hmm. That was a new sports game from a new developer, and at least out of the gate, it was, and I'm only going by your review, disappointing. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't super smooth, wasn't super great. I remember a bunch of years back, there was a developer, God bless them, they tried their best, a new independent developer that tried to make a football game based on the, historically black colleges. I think it was called like the Black Football Experience. I reviewed it for Games Radar.
Yeah.
It was like for Grambling and mm-hmm. and colleges like that. And, it was painful because it's just the game was – it was so clunky. It was not good, right? And when you're used to playing Madden NCAA football and then you play a different football game, a different engine, it's just it was very difficult. So anyway, my point is it's going to be interesting to see whether they hit a jackpot, and this is a group that has the skill set to – make this kind of a game, control well, and be responsive and fun, or whether the controls are difficult, or after 2 to 4 minutes you kind of have done everything, and it, you know what I mean, like there's so much that is hard to get right. It's going to be fascinating to see it. I have nothing but positive hopes for it. I'm going to pick it up. You know, but it is hard to get these games right. It's very difficult, especially the first time. So there's a lot of upside, and there's a number of things to sort of be like, okay, I want to see a little bit more in action before I, mm-hmm. you know, I'm ready to crown this as, you know, the next cool thing.
I also wonder what the market is for this. Like I see, I've received a lot of tweets. I've gotten comments on my website, about the game, when they see more of it, when there's more details, the roster, and people, there are people who are excited about it. But if there was a real market for this game, wouldn't EA have kept doing NBA Jam?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer. They know their market research. They own the IP. They own the licenses. You would think that simply to try to extract the most value from their very expensive license, that they would produce an NBA Jam. They would update it because they had one a few years ago. Like, but those guys are pretty savvy with this kind of stuff. So that leads me to believe that there isn't, or it is a small and vocal, because they're, you know, every time, Brian, we either put out calls for questions or even just people independently hit us up like, man, why are there any sports games? I used to love arcade sports games. You know, I used to play Blades of Steel or NHL, or I used to play, you know, Sega, or, you know, all the bigs, you know, whatever it is, like, yep. Dozens and dozens of arcade games. We hear that all the time. Me personally, I don't think there is, because there have been some decent games. You know, the last NBA Jam was at minimum decent. I thought it was fun. I think the market is much smaller than it used to be, and I think it's much more because there's just so much more that to play. Yeah. And I also think that it's hard. I've talked to people all the time that don't play sports video games. Sports video games are intimidating. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not a Madden or an NBA 2K, the fact that AAA sports games have been so intimidating for a long time definitely has scared away some people from even trying video games anymore, because just they get overwhelmed. So there's a whole bunch of that stuff floating around.
Yeah. One differentiator from those other arcade NBA games is that it will be releasing in May. Very different. I could be wrong on that. I don't remember these games being summer releases or during the playoffs. But at the very least, it doesn't have the direct competition to deal with. So it will have kind of an opening in that sense, with MLB The Show being the last sports game that released, and you know, maybe some other independent games around it, but. It'll be interesting to see whether it does gain a following, whether it does, because those arcade games that you mentioned, Rich, that were, you know, people remember fondly, I always looked at those as kind of a bridge to the simulation games, and I thought the simulation games would suffer, and I think they have in a lot of ways. Like you said, they're so intimidating, especially for somebody who's never played it before, to jump in. That usually, I believe a lot of people kind of started with the arcade games and kind of worked their way up to the more simulation games. You kind of learned your way through that process, and now you see the way the current sim games are built, and You see the direction changing towards the card collecting modes, right? Which are a little easier, I think, for people to understand, a little easier to get people who are inexperienced engaged with, at least conceptually. And I wonder if the loss of those arcade games kind of has made these games we have now suffer in ways that they may not be able to recover from. They're adjusting, but as far as the traditional way we've always played these games, they're changing, which would have happened anyway, but I digress.
Things always change. Yes. That's, you know, there's just no getting around it. Things change in technology. Things change in video games. Things change in sports. It's always evolving. And as we have continued to move towards a always online, persistent world, they're going to continue to change. There's no doubt about it. That's the world we're in. I mean, you know, I just look at even EA Access today. I finally got FIFA in the vault, and I'm excited because I've been waiting for that. Mm-hmm. Because I'm knowing that I get FIFA now every year as part of my EA Access, and because I am happy playing Pro Evolution when it comes out, I'm going to play me a whole lot of FIFA over the next 2 or 3 months, even though I'm terrible at it compared to Pro Evolution, because I knew it was coming to the EA Access vault. I just didn't go out and buy it. Didn't have to. There was other stuff that I could play. But now that it's there, I'm going to play it. And that's because I have the subscription service to EA, and that's my expectation. So I keep talk about things changing. They're only going to keep changing. They are not going to stay the same. 2 or 3 years from now, it's not going to look completely different, but it'll be different. And, and a couple, 2 or 3 years after that, same thing.
All right. Another basketball-related piece of news, Rich. A leaked image of a menu screen for NBA Live 18. Now, this is a theoretical game that EA claims will be coming this fall. We know that. They've canceled most of the NBA Lives they've said were coming. But if this does materialize, what was noticed in that image was the WNBA logo, which would be a brand new thing for these sim games to incorporate. And I'm wondering then, Rich, is this news at all? Does it matter? Because I remember back, and I think it's great to get female representation in the games. I think it's great because it's an underrepresented segment of consumers. It's a, you know, you want to get as many people to feel involved in these games as possible, helps them grow, helps the fan base grow, helps you, you know, it helps the game succeed. But EA introduced the Women's World Cup in FIFA 2 years ago. Last year, they didn't say a word about it. Does it move the needle at all to have NBA or WNBA involved here? Because it's not a popular league. It did draw pretty decent ratings, all things considered, for its WNBA finals, I think. But and you see that in college, women's college basketball also, where UConn finally went down, that created kind of a stir. Is this anything for NBA Live that's going to end up mattering?
I don't think so. I agree with what you said, that it is a good thing to have the WNBA represented. I remember many years ago there was an NCAA basketball game that had some of the top women's teams in it. I'm not going to falsely represent myself as a big fan of women's basketball. I'm not. I don't watch the NBA, WNBA. I did watch the game of, was it South Carolina against Connecticut, where they knocked them off. I watched that game. So I am at least that kind of a fan. But to me, that was more of an event than a basketball game.
Right. But it was completely unexpected.
But it was good basketball. It was legit good basketball. So, but again, I'm not going to represent myself as some sort of women's college basketball fan. I'm just not. And that's okay. So I think it's a good thing. I don't think it moves the needle for the market. I think it's good marketing, to be completely frank, right? I mean, it is good marketing to be more inclusive of a broader array of sports. There are famous women's basketball players like, for example, Dellavedova in Washington, who's like the best female basketball player in the world right now. Like, it can be fun to be these players in a video game setting. So it's positive from a number of angles. I just don't think that is going to, nor do I think anybody at EA thinks it's going to mean that it will sell a tremendously larger number of copies. To me, it's just kind of like being a good steward of the sport, right? You're a basketball game and you are representing a larger group of the basketball universe by having the WNBA included. I think that's cool. I'm not going to pretend that I'm going to play a whole lot of it other than maybe just dabble in it for the novelty of it. And I don't think there's enough WNBA fans that will buy it that will make a dent.
Right.
Having said all that, I'm totally cool with it, and I think it's smart marketing.
Yeah. You know, we've looked at different avenues, ways companies can, in sports, increase their sales or get new consumers involved. And one of those avenues was, females who couldn't even, pull up a game, an NHL or the FIFA or NBA, whatever it might be, and create a female avatar, for their career mode type of thing, or whatever it might be, and how that's kind of excluding those people who want to feel involved or represented.
And by the way, not to interrupt you, but I will just I don't have a daughter, but if I had a daughter, I can guarantee you that I would be even more excited about this, and I would fire it up more than just for the novelty of it, but as a potential way to introduce a daughter to sports and or video games and or sports video games. So, but I don't have a daughter, but if I did, I could totally see feeling that way too.
So this takes us back to the original problem, which came up earlier, of how complicated these games are to play, how intimidating they are. And I don't see an NBA Live, or even if NBA 2K was doing this, as like a way to bring new people in. I just don't think it's going to work. I don't think, and like you said, I don't think EA's counting on this to build their brand. It's just an extra feature, an extra thing that they can talk about. But
what's also interesting is that it's a different game. Women's basketball and men's basketball in many ways are different. It's played differently. It's different spacing. It's different size ball. It's much more of a fundamental type of a game. And so if you're going to have the WNBA and NBA Live, it's not just a matter of putting, female looking bodies on the male game and having be the same. You have to dramatically adjust the attributes, the sizes, the way, the speed, a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, they've had some WNBA players in, I know, for mocap sessions even, because absolutely, everything's very different.
So it's a significant, like, if it truly is part of the game, it's not just a novelty. They will have to dedicate significant resources to it, which is also interesting in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Rich, I know you got some questions in from listeners. I thought we could hit on those here before we wrap things up. Take a few of them. Do you have them on hand?
Sure. I do. Well, I at least have one of them right away. One of them is from Hacker Alias, Twitter handle, Hill to Leitner. Funny stuff. Mm. Hey, Rich, I'm in franchise trying to play like a pitcher, but the AI still relieves him. How do you change that? So he's referencing something I've talked about almost feels like every time we talk about the show, but that's okay. I get people reaching out to me about this all the time. Is that the way that I play the game, I'm playing a franchise as the Mets, and I player lock on typically Yoenis Cespedes after I say, okay, I'm going to play the game, today's game, and then you get the option now, which this year is even better. You just get the option, play the full game or play as player lock. So I go to player lock, and then I pick Yoenis Cespedes. Mm-hmm. However, when Noah Syndergaard is pitching, I pick him because it's fun to pitch as Noah Syndergaard. Dude's a good pitcher, right? So I'm typically Cespedes unless Syndergaard's pitching. So when you're a pitcher and you player lock, you need to be prepared, because when you're player locked, you are the player. You're not the player and the manager. You're just the player. So you can get substituted, but it's not up to you. You don't start warming guys up in the bullpen, and you don't say when you're coming out. So
what would the purpose be of player locking a pitcher? Because wouldn't the same
then you get
thing,
to pitch.
Well, yeah, but you could pitch. Oh, you don't want to deal with fielding at all.
You don't want to hit.
Okay.
Just I'm going to pitch.
Well,
I'm going to pitch.
I was just going to say that you could pitch, simulate the next half inning, and continue pitching, right?
Yeah, but why would you do that if you can just say, I'm going to pitch as Noah Syndergaard?
Okay.
I mean, it skips all that.
Well, yeah.
That's why player lock is great. You know what I mean? It's exactly like that. Yes, you could probably do these things, but when you're player locked, and it also just on a slightly bigger picture, being Cespedes three or four games in a row, but then being Syndergaard, I feel even more involved in the overall season.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, whether I'm Cespedes or whether I'm Syndergaard when he's pitching, by the sixth or seventh inning at the latest, I take off the player lock and I just go back into playing the full game, unless it's a blowout in either way. But when you're the pitcher, like I said, you're not also the manager. So you're at the whim. If the manager wants to take you out, you're just, you're out of the game. Like, that's it. So his question was, you know, the AI is relieving him. So what I typically do is, for sure, once I get at or around 80 pitches, I take off the player lock.
Yeah.
But also, if I even get into some trouble, like if there's like fourth inning, I'm giving up a couple runs and second and third and one out, then I'll take off player lock as well. Because a couple of times, not this year, but last year, I got relieved pretty early, much earlier than I wanted to. And then if I get out of trouble, I'll put player lock back on. So there's a couple different ways. But yeah, you don't – when you're pitching on player lock, it's not up to you when you come out. You come out when the manager says that you come out.
There's a lot of belief out there that the management AI as far as pulling pitchers is pretty flawed this year too, as far as pulling guys – earlier than they should, fifth inning, lower pitch counts, but just because they're giving up a base hit or two.
That's kind of how the game is played, though. I mean, that's the real – I'm not defending the AI, by the way. I'm just saying, like, I watch a lot of baseball, and I'm amazed at how quickly the starters come out and how many relief pitchers are used every day. It's just – I know it's been like this for a while, but it's just every year it seems to get a little faster. So I think that's a reflection. Yes, I'm sure if enough people are saying it, there's AI adjustments that could be made. But on the other hand, man, those pitchers, those starters don't throw nearly as many pitches in an innings as they used to, and it's not even close.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so did we get the answer to that then in there?
I think so.
So you're saying to take player lock off at any point that could be problematic.
When you're in trouble or when you get, 75, 80 pitches, yeah, for sure, take player lock off, because you'll get taken out no matter what. Okay, so I got a couple other questions. This one comes from a fellow named Luke. Says, hey, big fan of the podcast and all of you. Thank you. That's awesome.
We love you.
We really do, and I'm serious about that. Thank you for being a listener. We appreciate that. He says, I'm still on the fence about MLB 17, and it's interesting. I haven't heard that overall. Is there a big enough difference between 17 and 16 to warrant a purchase for an above-casual gamer? I like that term. That's me. I'm above casual. I'm not hardcore, but I'm above casual. And what he defines as minimal online, limited Diamond Dynasty, but serious franchise and offline player. It seems all these other sports game titles get a year-to-year comparison, but I haven't heard much for MLB 17, probably being drowned out by community and server challenges. So the first thing that I'll say is, and I won't hog this whole time up, but the first thing that I'll say is, it is – I rarely try to sort of make purchasing recommendations, because spending $50 or $60 to somebody, it means very different things. To somebody's like they got a – that's the one thing that they can get in over a couple of months, right? Is that $50 or $60? Other people, $50 or $60, they can drop that and they don't even think twice about it. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest context. I can't go around saying that there's a big enough difference between 17 and 16 to warrant a purchase for an above casual gamer. What I can tell you is that this is the best playing version of MLB, the show, that I've played yet. It's better than last year and definitely better than 2 years ago. So from that perspective, I say yes, especially if you're minimal online and limited Diamond Dynasty. Brian, what do you say about that?
So, this is a difficult one because I think if there's any sports game that is kind of stays at an even level year to year the most, it's the show. And I'm not saying they don't improve it, because they do. So you have, you know, the ball physics improvements. You have things like the animations not costing you outs. You have bunting been improved greatly.
Right. Those are three important things. Yes. When you're talking about a simulation sports game that's already really good, those are important things.
But I also have to say to that is the average. So as he said, he's an quote unquote above casual gamer. To a casual gamer, I think it's harder to say on a year-to-year basis with the show. It's harder to say with MLB 17 that, yes, if you bought last year's game, you should definitely buy this year's game. I think that's difficult. But I do think if it's someone who is more passionate about the video game or more passionate about baseball in general, it's easier to make that recommendation to say, yeah, I think you'll find those changes worthwhile. I think you'll find the value there based on those things. Because it is, a lot of it is very subtle. A lot of it is stuff you'd maybe only see once a game or once every couple games or whatever it might be. But that's kind of baseball for you, right? It's yes. A long haul. And by the time you put all that time into it, have you received back that value? And I think for people who do appreciate baseball, I think they probably would find that.
I do. But again, that's the way that I play the game. And again, we're not talking about all the problems with Diamond Dynasty and online, because if that's all you're looking for, which he's not, that's all you're looking for, it's a very different answer to that question.
Right. Like when I reviewed the game, if I was reviewing it just based on gameplay, that'd be like a 9 or a 10. But there's other factors, obviously, that go in. Franchise mode is not really changed much at all, as one example. Like I think you and Millennium may have discussed a bit it is very heavily changed. The changes were based on Diamond Dynasty and a little bit with Road to the Show. But if you're just a franchise player, you played last year, you know, I don't know what you're going to find.
I played last year.
Besides the gameplay, right?
Right. And to me, that's what MLB the Show is. What makes it great is the gameplay. That's what I'm looking for. And I just love to get in my zone and play two or three games of baseball. I just love it. I love how the game plays. I love pitching. I love fielding. I love hitting. I'm terrible at hitting. But boy, when I hit it well, I hit it well because I did something right. You know, I swung at the right speed, and I picked the right zone, and I just did it right. It's hard to hit well in baseball. Man, when I do, it feels so good in that game. I'm just, to me, they didn't have to change the franchise. I like the franchise. They make it pretty easy to understand what's going on at every level of my organization, and to bring players up and to scout for players and to trade players. Like, you don't need to change things just to change things. I'm not suggesting that they should not invest in making franchise mode even better, deeper, faster, or whatever, adding new ways to experience it. What I am saying is that there are certain things in a sports video game that on a year-to-year basis, because the sports don't change year-to-year, and these games are so big and so good. I mean, my goodness, I'm perfectly fine with franchise mode being exactly the same pretty much as last year. Mm-hmm. Totally fine with it.
Okay, we had another question, I think, in there.
Yep.
Too.
Any news on Golf Club 2? You had a great interview with the designer producers a couple years ago, and it's a fun little game. What was so cool was how the community created all these tournaments and golf clubs and competitions amongst themselves without a true central online hub in Golf Club 1. So I haven't personally seen any news on Golf Club 2 recently. I was a huge fan of the Golf Club for all the reasons that he said. We talked about it on the show quite a bit. And, yeah, we did have the Golf Club guys on a couple of times. huge fan. Love the studios. It's HP Studios, I believe, right? Is the makers of Golf Club. Love what they do. I didn't actually play their. They had a snow game, a skiing or a snowboarding game come out recently. Yeah, I did not.
That was not very good.
Okay, but I love the Golf Club, and I'm as soon as the Golf Club 2 is available, I'm going to buy it. I can tell you that right now. I'm going to buy it sight unseen. But I haven't heard the latest. Have you heard any new news about it, Brian?
Well, it's interesting. We have not. There hasn't been much news related to Golf Club 2. So it was announced last June. So it's almost been a year since they announced the sequel. Back in early February, they released a teaser trailer and some details on improvements, things like tournaments within career mode, online societies, and extra stuff that they're putting into the course creator. So there's a little bit of info on it. And I think it was supposed to release at some point this summer. Thing is, we still don't even have a release date. There is no release date yet. But what there is one change.
It's okay.
Well, it's okay unless it's being being pushed off farther that we don't know about yet.
Well, that's not okay, correct.
There is one change that was made recently, not anything that was announced, but that I noticed on various retail sites as they dropped the price. It was originally going to be $50. It's now going to be $40, and I don't know if that's an indication of anything other than they dropped the price. But I can't remember another game announcing a price and months later actually deciding to sell it for cheaper. So instead of $50, it's now $40.
Okay. I'm fine with that too.
Sure. No doubt. I don't think anybody's going to complain about that.
I mean, what did the original launch for? 40 or 50? Do you remember?
I think it was 50.
Okay. Possible.
It was. I remember people thinking it was a lot for an unlicensed game.
Right.
And that is still, even at $40, a lot for an unlicensed sports game.
That's correct.
We'll have to see. It has a clear slate here in summer. You know, there is no EA Sports golf game this year. That seems to have been shelved. There is a new. It's not even called Hot Shots Golf. It was talked about today.
Right.
Called like Everybody's Golf. They changed the name of Hot Shots.
Yep.
So there is that coming later. So you would think you know, they're not really competing necessarily. Very different type of games. But
yes,
I would think Golf Club would hit first. But yeah, I mean, that's all we really have on the game at this point. Other than I continue to try and monitor things and get information. There's just nothing coming out right now.
You know, it's interesting announcing a game a year before it comes out. I don't like that personally, and when I say I don't like it, I don't mean like I think it's a bad idea. If I'm running a game company, I'm not announcing a game that far in advance. And of course, a lot depends upon what franchise you're talking about as well, too, right? I mean, are you a billion-dollar company announcing a franchise, you know, a teaser trailer for a game that's going to ship in 12 months is a very different thing than a annual sports game or a new IP. But I really, and this has a lot more to do with me personally, I think, than something that may be particularly smart. But I love announcing something really close to when it's available, because to me as a consumer, that to me screams, okay, this is legit. It's coming out. It's real. I'm going to buy this really soon. I'm going to pre-order it today because I'm going to be playing it in like 30 days. You know what I mean? That's kind of what I like about the announcing a game relatively close to its release date. I was surprised they announced it a year out. On the other hand, you know, it's probably good for the fans to know couple of years after the release of the Golf Club. But yeah, there is a new one coming. So again, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying me personally, I'm not the biggest fan of that, because to me, that's a long time and you just completely forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you are HP Studios, you don't have the massive, you know, multi-million dollar marketing budgets where you can continue to roll the drumbeat for that 12 months, right? You know, these guys don't, I'm sure, don't have nearly that big of a budget. So they know, okay, we're going to spend a lot of money making this announcement. Then we're going to not be able to do a whole lot for 6 months and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm glad. I'm hoping that it continues to build upon what I thought was in a very strong, very different game that was much more like the real game of golf than any other game I've ever played before,
mm-hmm.
which I thought had a lot going for it. So I'm excited. Looking forward to it. Big fan. Hope it's great.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for this week, Rich. Thank you. It was fun to get into some other topics. As much as I love baseball, it was nice to talk about some other stuff too.
Yep, I love baseball too, and it's definitely nice to talk about something other than
we've got like 6 more months of baseball, so oh boy, it's gonna be a long year. So yeah,
NBA Playgrounds coming out next month, Mario Kart 8 coming out in a week. There's some cool stuff happening, man.
Oh yeah. All right, well, thank you everyone for listening again. We appreciate it, and thank you, Rich Grisham, for spending another hour plus with me. We will be back with another Press Row podcast next week. Take care till then.